Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
I'm Jesse Thorne. It's Bullseye. My next guests are a dynamite songwriting duo, Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez. Together, they've written some of the catchiest movie songs of the last 10 years. Like, for example, you have probably seen Frozen, right? And even if you haven't, you probably know this song.
Let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go.
Or do you remember Remember Me from Coco?
Remember me. Have to say goodbye, remember me.
They wrote that too. They also wrote the music for Frozen 2, which is just out on home video. Robert has also written music for The Book of Mormon, Avenue Q, Scrubs, and more. He is one of only 12 people to have won an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony Award. Yes, he is an EGOT. When I talked with them in 2018, it was just after Coco had come out. If you haven't seen Coco yet, you first of all should. It's great. The story revolves around Miguel, a young boy who's living in a small town in Mexico. He's an aspiring musician, even though his family has, for quite some time, banned music entirely. And on the Day of the Dead, when families all over the country remember their lost loved ones, everything comes to a boiling point. He runs away from home and, by a stroke of magic, meets his ancestors in the land of the dead. It's a fantastic premise, told with rich, striking colors. Is it a kid's movie about death? Yes, kind of. But it's also about the legacies that we leave behind and the ways that families change. Remember Me, the song that Kristen and Robert wrote, drives that point home. Let's listen to it right now. This is a version from the movie, a duet between two characters.
Remember me, though I have to say goodbye. Remember me. Don't let it make you cry. For even if I'm far away, I hold you in my heart. I sing a secret song to you each night we are apart. Remember me. Though I have to travel far, remember me. Each time you hear a sad guitar, know that I'm with you the only way that I can be. Until you're in my arms again. Remember me.
Kristen Anderson Lopez and Bobby Lopez, welcome to Bullseye. I'm so happy to have you on the show, or back on the show as well.
Thank you so much for having us. We were so excited when we saw this on our itinerary.
I am worried for you because you guys have a show opening on Broadway, which is 3,000 miles from where we're sitting right now in like 2.5 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Are you like frantically rewriting songs right now, or are you locked in?
Let's see. In the car on the way here, we were mixing or like working on the final mix for the tracks that we're releasing on Frozen Fridays starting February 23rd. We may have rewritten some of the opening number the night before we flew out here for the Oscar luncheon.
There's just no telling whether we did or not.
There's a lot. It's a lot. There's a lot.
I mean, you have been at this level of intensity and efficiency now for something like 5 or 7 years. Like, I don't think I've ever corresponded with you, which I do once or twice a year, without you being in crunch time to deliver a giant project.
Yeah, see, that's a sad, sad truth.
What do your children think of, and the two of you are married and have children, what do your children think of your lives when mom and dad are in crunch time getting a musical on stage?
Well, this one is different than any other, because we have never actually had to both birth a Broadway musical, which is basically like taking med school boards for 5 to 7 weeks. So this one we've armored up, we've prepared them since October. We've been talking about February and March, like winter is coming. and we have my sister and her writing partner coming to live at our house starting February 15th. So if we need to see a preview and then spend all night writing the show and then spend the whole next day putting it in, rewriting the show and spend the whole next day putting in the rewrite. We can. You need to have that flexibility. Do you have anything to add to that? Because I'm talking a lot.
Well, it's funny because, they've always been mildly annoyed at our trips to go to awards shows and stuff like that. And this time, they've been incredibly supportive. And I think it has something to do with the fact that we're bringing them as our dates to the Oscars. They were like, when are nominations announced?
Yeah, actually, clocking it. They were like, nominations 7 days from now. And we actually did just go by their dresses on Saturday afternoon at Saks Fifth Avenue. And they're very excited. So they have skin in the game on this Oscars. But we've been preparing them for, that's just going to be a wonderful time for us to, in the middle of previews for Frozen, to just leave New York and just be together. And yes, we do have to walk a red carpet and wear some fancy clothes, but it will be 24 hours
of quality time.
That's a very ambitious way to look at this trip. It sounds like it will be 24 hours of trying to get children and their luggage onto airplanes and that kind of thing.
Oh, they're good. They're very good travelers, I have to say. They know the rolling bag. They're really good with that.
The flight attendants always give us compliments on them.
They like to sit together and be really, really polite, and then the flight attendants give them free stuff. They have worked it out where if we are model children and we pretend like we really love each other and we're very polite, that we will get so much sugar from those flight attendants. It's a system.
Kristen, I get the impression that you fell in love with Bobby like when you laid eyes on him.
Yeah, maybe you heard the story. I did. I totally did.
She did.
He walked in the door. And I was just out of like a 6-year relationship, and definitely having that moment of like, what's next for me? And he walked in. I was like, that's my husband. I hope he's not too young. I hope he's not gay.
Because I was coming in to play. Because
he was coming
songs.
In to play a song and play a female puppet. Because he was presenting the first two songs he had written for Avenue Q, but there was just this very electrical thing. It turns out
she was right.
Turns out he was my husband. He's not gay, and he's a little younger.
I know about the incredible power of having graduated from an arts high school where I did theater and met my wife. I know how much juice it carries to be heterosexual in that environment. It's a real thrill. It's like something I would never ask for another partner. I'm thrilled to be married. Once in a while, I do think, remember how fun it was when you were the only straight guy around?
Well, in the case of the BMI workshop, that was the one place where it was opposite because it was a writing workshop. So, if girls are socialized, if they love theater and everybody, all their parents and everyone around them says, you're an actress. That's why you have so many girls doing the plays and only like two guys, the two straight guys who get it all. BMI was the opposite. It was a bunch of straight
bunch of dudes,
men
yeah.
who can't really express themselves, so they've chosen to express it through music and rhyme and rhythm. And like two girls. It was the one time that I ever felt like the hot girl was at the BMI workshop for that year.
We got to change that, honey.
Well, it's all about picking your context. I'm trying to think where else I could go to be the hot girl.
I mean the Oscars, right?
Oh yeah. Margot Robbie like walked by at the Oscar luncheon yesterday, and it just
there's no one more beautiful at the Oscar luncheon than you.
Oh, you're so sweet. But Margot Robbie was. She's like not a real person.
My friend Kumail Nanjiani is very beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That guy, and they're another married couple that are both nominated.
Are you guys going to go on like an Oscar double date?
We should do that.
We were the only two people who, like, we were each other's dates, and when you get called up, you go on this platform, just like middle school graduation. And we were the only two collaborators that got to stand next to each other because we were married and sitting next to each other.
Do you feel, Bobby, when you are writing or performing musical theater, like you can sit comfortably in the kind of, I think the word I'm looking for is shamelessness that the medium requires?
I think there's a lot of joy for me, and I think for Kristen too, in inhabiting a more dramatic part of yourself and imagining what a character in a highly charged situation would be feeling. And we also, you know, we grew up loving this stuff, you know, we grew up wearing out these cast albums on, you know, Walkmans, on tapes and on record players. And you know, I think once that is the greatest hits of our brain, and we wanted to be like them.
What about you, Kristen? Are you naturally shameless?
I'm hopelessly shameless. I've been shameless. There's in terms of the embracing the large, vibrant, stylized world of musical theater. I mean, I just said that with very large gestures of my hands. I think that we have a little too much shame about expressing our emotions in the current climate right now. I think we'd all be a lot healthier if when we needed to express something, we were able to say like, Perron, or you know, the sun will come out tomorrow. Like these are human emotions taken to an extreme, and I think extremes are good because that is what being alive is.
Well, I think it seems appropriate that we should listen now to one of your most iconic songs, which is "Let It Go" from Frozen, which is basically about that.
Snow glows white on the mountain tonight, not a footprint to be seen. A kingdom of isolation, and it looks like I'm the queen. The wind is howling like this swirling storm inside. Couldn't keep it in, heaven knows I tried. Let them in, don't let them see. Be the good girl you always have to be. Conceal, don't feel, don't let them know. Well, now they know. Let it go, let it go.
So something I like about that is I heard that Bobby, you actually came up with a kingdom of isolation and I'm its queen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a drag queenish line, isn't it?
Bobby has big emotions. For this mild mannered guy, he actually, I do think every once in a while, I turn to him and I'm like, okay, Elsa, Bobby definitely has this like part of him that needs to stay perfect and small, and then something will just happen and this huge heart just sort of bursts out of him. And so I think that's where those early lines in the song come from.
Can you give me an example of that in your life?
Okay, here's a great example. The first time that we had to take my daughter to get her first shots, the newborn, our first daughter, we went to the doctor, and the doctor was like, okay, we're going to do it now. And I held the baby, and they gave the baby the shot, and, you know, she sort of went, and Bobby just started sobbing, absolutely, like, body shaking, sobbing. And that's just sort of who he is. Like, things will hit him and it'll just be a sudden wave of emotion. Whereas I'm very Lutheran and Scandinavian. And
it takes a lot more than a shot to do that.
I have to, you know, it takes a lot to take me out of the needle, the safety of the needle, to make it go past the line. And that's always shocking, too. But it's only happened like 3 times in my life.
I definitely like trying to white knuckle that needle. I'm like, you're not going anywhere, needle. No. We're staying moderately upbeat.
Yes, yes. Like, it's fine. It's fine. I'm very resilient. I'm very resilient.
It seems like that song was part of the catalyst for transforming Frozen from a traditional fairy tale into, in some ways, kind of a deconstruction of the kind of fairy tale that Disney movies had been, especially for, you know, princess-driven, female-driven Disney stories. That there was something about, oh, maybe this character who was just going to be an evil queen type is actually a different thing. I presume that when you're writing a song from a character's perspective, there's no way to do it without empathizing with that character. But it seems like in writing that villain song, you know, in writing I'm the bad guy song, or in this case, the bad woman, you found points of empathy that were so deep that you, and so relatable to you, maybe you personally, Kristen, that like you couldn't simply let this be a villain.
Absolutely. I think once I started, we were taking a walk in Prospect Park and just talking about how do we deepen this song. And we started talking about the pressures that we feel. And I started unleashing it, as a wife does, on my husband, you know, all the pressure I was feeling at the time with small kids to be an incredible mom and cook the good food and be around, but also have a career and also be thin and also have a nice house. And just, I started realizing, oh my God, I am trying to be perfect in so many ways. No wonder I'm exhausted and dying to drink white wine at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And I tapped into that part of myself, because what woman doesn't feel the need, like she has to be perfect? Because the movies are telling us that we have to be.
What was it like for you to hear that in Bobby in such a concrete way? I mean, those are themes that we hear as dad types, but I feel like it's really powerful to hear it from someone that you're in love with so explicitly.
You know, I have to admit that the movie itself. I mean, first of all, hearing it from Kristen, you know, you hear your wife say things like that a lot, and you assume, well, she has it tough, and I have it tough. And I think it was a process of making this film and then seeing the film and seeing the response to it that really changed the lens through which I look at these issues and I think made me a lot more of a feminist than I even was before. Just how hard it is to get past all of the baked-in bias that we all just have from being born, you know, from being born and being raised in a culture, and it being time for the culture to change, and the culture of our family certainly changed. Before Frozen, it felt like I was the main writer and Kristen was helping, and now it feels like an equal partnership. I realize how much she has to say, how much she has to say that no one has heard in a big mainstream way. And, you know, I'm constantly in awe of how blind I was, you know, for so long.
Bobby's acting woke. Which is good. It's good because...
that whole time I thought you were looking at him lovingly. You were just waiting.
It's very hard to crack Kristen. She's not good at vulnerability.
No. I do see a huge transformation. I'm not kidding. In my husband, over the last couple years, as he really realized, he realized the lens. He was able to see the metal frame around the lens because Frozen was, here he was representing this thing that was widening the lens a bit, and he realized, oh my gosh, there really is a lens, when I noticed that, oh, almost everything we do, we have to get through a committee of men. And then it has to get through critics, which are mostly men of a certain age. And, you know, it's just pointing it out. Like, look, it's the numbers. Look at the numbers. Look at the how many men are in this room and how many women are in this room. And he's just paying a little more attention to it. That's all changing. And that's a really exciting thing. But we're at the beginning of a change. And it's exciting for me.
More Bullseye after a quick break, still to come. Bobby and Kristen tell me how to sneak grown-up jokes into kids' movies, like Frozen. It's harder than you'd think. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Kohler Intelligent Toilets. With a range of smart features for pampering, relaxation, and cleanliness, Kohler Intelligent Toilets are designed to provide an elevated experience. Enjoy warm water cleansing, warm air drying, and heated seat control. Surround yourself with ambient lighting and automatic air freshening, because every moment with a Kohler Intelligent Toilet is designed to make you feel your cleanest and most comfortable. Kohler invites you to discover what you've been missing at Kohler.com/intelligent toilets.
Hi, I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and I am the new host of NPR's TED Radio Hour. I am so excited because we are working on a bunch of new, amazing episodes. We're exploring big ideas about reinvention, making amends, and the psychological effects of climate change. Our first show drops March 13th. Please join me.
All right, Adam, Maximum Fun wants us to record like a promo to tell people that they should listen to The Greatest Generation. You want to do that?
No, I am tired of all the extra work. I just wanted to talk about Star Trek with my friend.
I think it would be good to like try and get some new listeners by appealing to the audiences of other shows. Like, this will only take a minute or two. It could be good for us.
We sit down for an hour every week and talk about a Star Trek episode and make a bunch of idiotic fart jokes about it. It's embarrassing. If it got out that we made this show, I think it would make us unemployable.
Adam, I have bad news for you. We have tens of thousands of listeners at MaximumFun.org.
Oh, my God. I think I'm going to throw up.
The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. Every Monday on MaximumFun.org.
I'm really going to be sick.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are the Academy Award-winning songwriters Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez. They talked to me in 2018. They wrote Let It Go from Disney's Frozen, Remember Me from Coco, and Into the Unknown from Frozen 2, which is available to watch at home. Now,
I want to play a song that the two of you wrote together, but I'd like you to tell me a little bit about it first. It's called Wide, Wide World.
It's our first song.
How'd you find that?
Together.
It's from a smash hit show called Bear in the Big Blue House.
Oh, no.
On Playhouse Disney.
Oh, wow. Wow, you dug deep, Jesse Thorne.
I'm a professional, man.
So I got this assignment because I was in with the music supervisor of the show long ago when we were in the BMI workshop. And Chris and I hadn't worked together at all. We were dating. We had just really started dating. And I tried a couple of takes on this song. My other collaborator, my main collaborator at the time, kind of begged out. And he was like, "You take this one." And then I kind of got stuck because I was used to writing with someone by then. And I said, "Kristen, why don't you come over?" And the guy doesn't know you're writing it with me, but let's just write it. And then if he says he likes it, then we'll tell him that you worked on it too. And then we can split the money. And I think we had to write 5 different versions of this song. I remember they sent us back and back and back. And it was mostly about these two otters that loved clams, and everything that they said had to be about clams.
Had to be about clams. Yes, the clam jokes, because we did like 3 more songs for Bear in the Big Blue House, and there's just not much you can say about clams, but we've
hasn't
said
been
it all.
Said. Well, particularly for children.
Yes.
Let's take a listen to the smash hit song Wide Wide World from Bear in the Big Blue House by my guests Kristen Anderson Lopez and Bobby Lopez.
I think that it sounds great. The wide open road, the wind in your fur, the whole world to explore.
The wide, wide world, it's open and free. The road, the wind, the sun and the sea. I hear adventure calling to me out there in the wide, wide world.
The wide, wide world, I'm hearing the call. But the road seems so long and trees seem so tall.
Those are the voices you dream of singing. Just spectacular.
But did you see the dueling philosophies at work there?
Yeah.
That was just a prototypical dueling philosophy song that we tend to really try to avoid from now.
Bobby, you co-wrote two huge smash musicals. And both of them, Avenue Q and The Book of Mormon, were partly very sincere emotional journeys and partly kind of parodic and satirical. And I wonder if you ever worried that you were good enough to write a parody song, but were you good enough to write a quote-unquote real song?
I never worried about that. I only worried
good.
If I was.
Can you start worrying about that?
Thank you. I'll add it to my worry list.
Now that you got the EGOT, I just want to take you down a few pegs.
I didn't get into songwriting to be funny. I never thought that that's where I would go. It was always one thing I wanted to do, to make a musical where you laugh from beginning to end that drew from great spoof material like Airplane or Spinal Tap or one of those great, the Simpsons musicals that show up in the episodes.
Let's hear a song from The Book of Mormon, which one of my guests, Bobby Lopez, co-wrote. This is the opening number. It's called Hello.
Hello. My name is Elder Price. And I would like to share with you the most amazing book. Hello, my name is Elder Grant. It's a book about America a long, long time ago. It has so many awesome parts. You simply won't believe how much this book can change your life. Hello, my name is Elder Green. I would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ. Hello. My name is Elder Young. Hello. Did you know that Jesus lived here in the USA?
I think one of the cool things about the Book of Mormon is, it has much of the tone that the South Park guys have spent the last 20-some years working on, which is to say that it's pretty no holds barred, particularly for a Broadway musical, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But I think the subject matter and the medium both lend themselves to a kind of generous open-heartedness that you don't get from Airplane or any of the, Spinal Tap or those other 10,000 jokes spoof things. Like the fact that these are young Mormon missionaries are the subjects of this, which is like the most emotionally vulnerable person in the world. It's a person who's, as in that opening number, just like showing up at someone's door because they believe in God.
As well-meaning as possible. Yeah.
Which is like a really beautiful and amazing thing, Oh, yeah. And so you can make an infinite, there's a wonderful song in the show called I Believe, which is like an inspirational tune about believing in, about having faith, but also the weird specifics of Mormon theology. And I don't mean to single out Mormon theology. All theology sounds weird if you don't believe in it.
That's the point.
Yeah. The Book of Mormon, right? Yeah. It all sounds crazy, but it's so important. Yeah. Like, how do we get through the big highs and the big lows if you don't believe in something impossible?
Yeah, and I don't think the whole thing works without that emotional generosity
Those
characters.
They say that parody closes on Friday night on Broadway. You need to have an emotional through line of your show. Otherwise, people are like, huh, fun. And then they don't go home and recommend it. You need to feel something. And that's what Broadway is all about.
You guys wrote some great jokes into into the Frozen songs. And I feel like you guys have, like, a lot of the jokes that are slipped into Frozen are sort of rhyme scheme feints and, like, little things that I would recognize from, like, friends who improvise musicals where, you know, you take a sort of a prosaic word and then you surprise them with a weird word that rhymes with it and that kind of thing.
Yes, that tends to be what cracks us up. I don't know. We were just recalling Bobby did a version of Mystery Science Theater and was just vamping to something on screen. And he wrote this little song about smelting. And
then, yeah, they were iron workers smelting.
We smelt. it's language can be really goofy, and it's fun to lean into that.
Do you have a story about how you got the joke, how can you have a ballroom without any balls?
I was going to bring that one up.
Into a children's film?
I think it was
deeply sincere children's film.
The original line was, we got the ballroom, just no balls, which I think is a better dual meaning.
We have
line.
The ballroom, just no balls. Yeah. That one did not get through. That one we had to soften it a little. But somehow, why have a ballroom with no balls?
It didn't move the needle. They were kind of like, yeah, that's great. That's a good line. They've had this ballroom and no balls.
Yeah, one of the things we had to cut from that was, I hope that I don't vomit in his face. they were like, you can't say vomit. You just can't say vomit. It makes people vomit.
No, there was a girl in the story room who you could tell every time we mentioned it or talked about it, she just got sicker and sicker. She was turning green at the end of the song. And so we were like, come on. That's funny. And then our daughter came up with the alt line.
Well, we were at the dentist when they were like, no, it can't go through. And so I was trying to write it. And she was like, Mommy, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I have to rewrite. I hope that I don't vomit in his face. And then she went, I want to stuff some chocolate in my face. So she actually wrote that line. Ironically, at the dentist, who was probably saying, don't eat chocolate. Yeah.
It's good to know that the line is somewhere in between vomit and am I nervous or just gassy? Which is in the film.
Don't know if I'm elated or gassy is certainly, like, when we talk about writing from a very personal place.
Yes, the root chakra.
How did the song that you wrote for Coco, which is called Remember Me, come to you? Like, what was the RFP, the request for proposals? Like, what was the remit? what was the thing they needed?
Lee Unkrich, he had seen Finding Nemo because he was a co-director on it. And I think he had always said that he wanted to do a piece where the music was the emotional turning point. And so very, very early on, he reached out to us and we were working on, he knew he wanted to do something about memory and death and music and Dia de Muertos. And he asked us, can you write a song that can mean two completely different things depending on the singer and the arrangement? And we kind of said, you know, I hope so.
Yeah, it sounded like an amazing challenge, because how can a song, you know, be one thing and another at the same time? And we thought maybe we need, when he goes to the land of the dead, he has to discover a missing part of it. But then we realized, no, it'll be a lot cooler if we could write one song with the same chord progression, the same tune, the same lyrics. That means one, you know, completely shallow thing and can be completely deep and emotional at the turning point of the movie. So, I remember sort of almost tearing up when Lee was describing what he wanted. We were kind of really hungry to write this song, especially because, you know, as we've said, we have two girls that our lives really center around, and we have to leave them so much to come out here. And we're constantly, you know, writing little songs to them and for them. And then luckily we were able to turn it into a mariachi version that worked really rousingly.
That was more like, you know, good night, ladies, remember me.
Remember me, though I have to say goodbye, remember me. Don't let it make you cry.
Kristen Anderson Lopez and Bobby Lopez from 2018, Hollywood's premier songwriting power couple. If you haven't seen Coco, I recommend it no matter what your age is. They also wrote the music for the Broadway version of Frozen, which is still playing on the Great White Way. And I'm going to tell you this. My favorite song from Frozen 2 is When I Am Older by Olaf the Snowman. I stan a legend. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is produced at MaximumFun.org World Headquarters, overlooking MacArthur Park in beautiful Los Angeles, California, where firefighters came and shot their hoses into the lake from their big, tall ladders. I guess MacArthur Park is the ideal venue for big, tall ladder hose spraying exercise. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our producer is Kevin Ferguson. Jesus Ambrosio is our associate producer. We get help from Casey O'Brien. Our production fellow is Jordan Cowling. Our interstitial music is by Dan Wally, also known as DJW. Our theme song is by The Go Team. Thanks to them and their label Memphis Industries for letting us use it. And one last thing. We have done many, many, many interviews in the show's nearly two decades. If you love the movie Coco, check out our conversation with Lee Unkrich, the director of the film. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Just search for Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. You can keep up with the show there. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.